Show and Vern. Someone stepped up? Brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclend.com.
Good Thanksgiving morning to you, Kansas City. 610 Sports Radio and all of the world on the radio.com app. Until 3 p.m., the name is Sean Levine, a.k.a. the Sports Machine. Worst nickname on the radio. Sports Machine Sean Levine taking you up until 3 o'clock. Good Thanksgiving morning to you. I'll tell you what, man. These TVs in the studio are awful distracting, even when there's sports going on. But the good thing is, when I look out of the corner of my eye and there's a game going on, I can keep you updated on it. And generally, as a guy that knows a thing or two about sports, I don't really need the audio. However, right now I'm watching the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade out of the corner of my eye, and I have no idea what's going on. I need the play-by-play for that. I haven't known one. Oh, there's a float that I know. That's the float. A Paw Patrol float. The last six that have gone down the street, I have no idea what they are. I'm pretty sure I just saw Crash Bandicoot. Anyway, happy Thanksgiving. Let's talk sports, 913-576-7610 if you want to chime in. Also, you can text us at 69306. Before we look forward where the Kansas City Chiefs are headed, we'll definitely take a little bit of a step back. It's time to take a bit of a breather right now. It's Thanksgiving. Hopefully, you're just chilling like Corey Dillon on penicillin, getting the turkey ready around the family. I wouldn't say you got the fireplace going, but let's face it, it's like 60 degrees and beautiful here in Kansas City. But we've got some football kicking off in about an hour or so. We'll keep you updated with that. Now that we're at the bye week for the Kansas City Chiefs, right, 11 weeks into this thing, we can look back on it, and we will over the next 5 hours, and we'll talk about the good, we'll talk about the bad, which frankly there's been very, very little of, and then we'll talk about where we think this team is headed. And I'm not quite ready to put that Rams game to bed, because I think, and this is going to be a mouthful, but it's true, that was the most entertaining football game in the history of the sport. I can't even come up with what was second. And the Chiefs lost the game. I can't imagine that there was one person that was watching that game that fell asleep. I don't care if you worked an 18-hour shift. I don't care if you've got six children. I don't care how exhausted you were. There's no way, if you were watching that Monday night football game, Chiefs versus Rams, the way that both teams were scoring and wouldn't stop scoring, that you could look away. It was the most entertaining football game that I've ever seen. Bigger picture, if the only way to beat the Kansas City Chiefs in 2018 is what we saw on Monday, home team wins the game by 3 in a shootout. Does that sound familiar? Primetime game earlier this season, just a few weeks ago. On the road, Gillette Stadium in New England. If the only way the Patriots can beat you is at home in a shootout by 3 points. If the only way that NFL teams can beat the Kansas City Chiefs this season is by winning in a shootout by 3 points with home field advantage. And those are the facts. The Chiefs are 9-2. Most of their wins haven't been that close. There was that Denver game. There were a couple of them. But most of the games the Chiefs have won, they've dominated their opponent. And the two games that they've lost, you could argue they could have and should have won. That Patriots game, the Chiefs were going toe-to-toe with New England the entire time. And frankly, Patrick Mahomes, your future MVP, rookie of the year. Well, I guess he's not going rookie of the year. That guy, you've probably heard of him, didn't do anything in the first quarter. It was the only bad quarter of football that I can remember Patrick Mahomes playing this entire season. First quarter versus the New England Patriots. And all the Patriots could do with home field advantage in a shootout is win that game by 3. And I saw the same thing this past Monday. A lot of people think that those are the two best teams in football, along with the Chiefs, the Rams, and the Patriots. Those are the only two teams that have been able to solve the riddle of the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs. So in a weird way, I actually feel better about this team than I did before Monday night. We knew the game was going to be entertaining. Hell, we knew heading into this season that this Chiefs offense was going to be not just good, but borderline great. And the way that it's played out, they're all-time great. There have only been two teams in the history of the league that have averaged 35 points per game. The Chiefs are right on pace to do that. But here's the scary thing, and this is scary as H-E double hockey sticks. Heading into this season, I was behind this very microphone sitting in this exact same seat. And I said, yeah, there's going to be some games this year that the Chiefs score 30 points and lose. And then I thought about it during the break, and I'm like, is that really going to happen? Are they really going to get into a game where they put up 32, 33 points, and they can't hold their opponent under 35 or 36? Is the defense really that bad? Reality check, yes. The defense is that bad. But here's what's so scary. It wasn't just 30. It wasn't just 40. The Chiefs scored 50 points on Monday Night Football and lost. Hell, you want to use my 40 number as an example? The Chiefs scored 40 points against the aforementioned New England Patriots and lost. And looking forward to the postseason, there are no elite defenses in the NFL these days. There's no Steel Curtain. There's no Baltimore Ravens. Hell, there's no Jacksonville Jaguars from last season. If I ask you right now, statistically, who's the best defense in the NFL? Give me an answer. Probably thought it was going to be the Vikings heading into this season. They're middle of the pack. If you're curious, statistically, it's the Houston Texans, which really not a lot of people are talking about. But if you think about the way that teams win in the AFC and are going to win in the playoffs this season, they're not going to stop you. They're going to outscore you. They're going to do the same thing that the Chiefs have done this entire season. The problem is this. There actually are teams out there that the Chiefs likely will have to face. Some teams that they've already faced. New England. Pittsburgh. You can throw that Houston offense in there. The Chargers, that as good as this Chiefs offense is, and don't get it twisted, they're all-time great, and they're way better than Dick Vermeil's offenses here in Kansas City. I would say they're better than Dick Vermeil's greatest show on turf. Comparing this offense to other great Chiefs offenses is an exercise not worth even doing. I mean, this by far is the most talented offense that the Chiefs have ever had. You could argue that the Chiefs have the best quarterback, they've got the best wide receiver, at least by the way they've played so far. What's the counter-argument? Is anybody out there going to tell me that there's been a quarterback that's played better than Patrick Mahomes? You're nuts. Tyreek Hill, look at the numbers. Nobody's played the position better than he has this season. Travis Kelce at tight end. There's an argument to be made, save Todd Gurley, that Kareem Hunt has been the best NFL running back. Best quarterback, best running back, best tight end, best wide receiver. It's going to give you a pretty good offense. The problem is your defense is so bad that when you score 40 against New England, you lose. The problem is the defense is so bad, even though the offense is transcendently good, the defense is so bad that you can put up 50 and still lose the game. And going forward in the postseason, this is not an issue that's going to go away. What happens when the Chiefs face the Chargers? Do the Chiefs have a better offense? Sure. But can the Chargers outscore the Chiefs any given day? Absolutely. Same thing with New England. Same thing with Pittsburgh. Same thing with Houston. So what's the Chiefs' MO from this point going forward? Here we are at the bye week, and it's been all sunshine and daffodils, right? Special teams have been really good. Butker's doing his thing. Tyreek Hill's the most dangerous punt and kickoff returner in the league. And I assume that Colquitt still plays on the team and still getting paid a salary, even though he probably shouldn't, for as infrequently as that guy's been used. So the special teams, check, check, and check. It's just fine. The offense, I can't wax any more poetic about it. I just told you I think the Chiefs have the best quarterback, the best wide receiver, the best tight end, and the second best running back. But the defense is so bad that it's still likely going to cost this team a Super Bowl. Does this team have a roster that's fully capable of winning a championship? Absolutely. But what happens when you have to play two or maybe three? It's felt like a foregone conclusion as this season's kind of played itself out that the Chiefs were going to get a first round bye. Well, don't look now. But if they are to slip up and New England and the Chargers keep winning, all of a sudden, instead of talking about home field advantage throughout, number one overall seed, having a bye, we're going to be talking about things like, you better go out and get your wild card tickets at Arrowhead Stadium because blank is coming to town. And the problem with blank, whoever they face a month, month and a half from now in the postseason, the opponent is probably not going to have as good of an offense as the Chiefs. I'm not going to try to argue that one with you. But if the Baltimore Ravens come into Arrowhead with that defense, does that at least put a little bit of fear into anybody? And that's just the first game. If you don't win the division, then you have to go, I don't know, let's say on the road to Pittsburgh and then on the road to New England. I'm not suggesting because the Chiefs lost that all of a sudden the sky is falling. In fact, I'm saying the opposite. If the only way that teams have figured out to beat the 2018 Kansas City Chiefs is by having home field advantage, getting into a shootout, and winning the game by three, well, a lot of things are going to have to line up for those said teams come the postseason. But as good as this offense is, and that's how they've been beating people all season long, and maybe we're going to look back on this, hindsight being 2020, a couple of months from now, and we're going to have a Super Bowl parade that matches the World Series parade from the Royals a few years ago. But based on what I've seen, even though the offense is transcendently good, I think Andy Reid is on his way to being coach of the year. I think Patrick Mahomes is on his way to being MVP. The concerns about the defense are going to be there until this team loses a playoff game and we have to jump on the radio and say, damn it, why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? And at this point, unfortunately, and I'm sorry for being negative, I meant to be positive since it's Thanksgiving. At this point, you got to dance with the girl you brought. There's nothing to do. The time to fix this defense was 6 months ago in the offseason. Pound for pound, player for player, they're going to have like two or three Pro Bowlers. Go figure. Chris Jones has been awesome this year. Reggie Ragland's left a bit to be desired. Anthony Hitchens has only been okay. Kendall Fuller's been aight. The entire secondary's been atrocious. Justin Houston has been a little bit up and down. But, man, has Chris Jones and Dee Ford been an absolute godsend to this defense? Could you imagine how bad this defense would be without those guys? Hopefully it's going to get better. I've got some news about Eric Berry that I think is going to make your Thanksgiving day just a bit happier. But coming up next, let's step inside the mind of the machine. Happy Thanksgiving morning, Kansas City. This is 610 Sports Radio. Rolling along on a Thanksgiving morning with Julio Sanchez, Sports Machine Sean Levine, taking you up until 3 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio. Coming up in about 10 minutes, we're going to welcome on national NFL writer Matt Verderam to talk some Kansas City Chiefs. I've got a couple of more thoughts on that Chiefs-Rams game, and then we'll put that one to bed and look forward the rest of the way. But right now, Julio, switch up the beats, and let's step inside the mind of the machine.
Old school with these beats.
Ah, you went with the Branson music. I like
it. That's right. The Warriors lost their fourth game in a row last night. How much trouble are they in?
Isn't it crazy that you could have a roster as talented as the Warriors? Well, I guess I should stop this point right now because DeMarcus Cousins isn't playing and Steph Curry has been hurt for a while. And all of a sudden, when you've got 40% of what I consider the most talented roster any time in any sport ever on the sidelines, you're probably not going to be as good as you otherwise would have been. But let's face it, Kevin Durant is basically the 2018 version of Tracy McGrady. Like, he can score a lot of points. He's definitely one of the top, let's call it, five or six players in the league. Same thing with Carmelo Anthony. 2 or 3 years into his NBA career, he's putting up 28, 30 points a game. Maybe he's taking his team to the first round of the playoffs, but what did a guy like that ever do? You can even throw Allen Iverson's name into this mix. Guys that put up 25, 30 points a game, but can they ever really win on their own? with Kevin Durant, we saw it. It's not like he didn't have a good roster around him. He had a Russell frickin' Westbrook, and before that, a guy named James Harden. And they went to one finals, albeit it was right before Kevin Durant really came into his prime. But if Kevin Durant is the best player on your team, you're never going to win a title. Golden State needs a healthy Steph Curry. If not, they're just another one of a group of really good teams, especially in the West. Steve Kerr, however, Steve Kerr understands this. And I appreciate that out of Steve Kerr. He came out earlier this week and said, we're finally in the real NBA. He realizes how lucky he got. In fact, I would argue that Steve Kerr is the luckiest sportsman, I don't know if that's an actual thing, person that has to do with sports in the history of the genre. Think about it. He played with Michael Jordan. What did he win there? Like 3, 5, 6 championships. Then he played with Tim Duncan. He takes another 3 or 4 championships. And then his first NBA coaching job, you get Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. And then the next year, you add Kevin Durant. And then 2 years after that, you add Boogie. Like, talk about a charmed existence. I wish I was Steve Kerr.
Yeah, but there's also some, I think there's, he's also a brilliant mind. So while he might have gotten lucky with the whole Jordan thing.
How do we know that? How do we know he's a brilliant mind?
Because he's an excellent coach. He is a top tier coach, NBA coach.
I'm not sure that I can say that.
Talent, yes, but he also put that talent together. He also put the schemes in to be able to make them successful. Well, so he definitely deserves credit for that.
What would Steve Kerr do with the current Orlando Magic roster? The same thing every Magic coach does.
I think he'd be a
better
coach than their current coach. Well, I don't know how many wins that would translate into when you don't have talent, but he's able to balance the talent with his scheme.
Flip side of that, what do you think Julio Sanchez as the head coach of the Golden State Warriors would have done the last 3 years? Because I think he would have won 2 championships. I think it's much more about talent than it is coaching.
It might not be necessarily the coaching aspect, the X's and O's part of it, but there is a lot that goes into managing those personalities.
It's kind of like Phil Jackson. Everybody wants to give him credit for being an all-time great coach, and it's tough to argue that he's not when he's got, what, like 11 rings? But he also had a couple of guys named Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant that I think I could have coached a championship. What's next?
Are you a Black Friday shopper, and have you found any good deals yet this year?
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go out there and get myself a my plan is to go out there and get myself a 42-inch TV for $185. I'm not going to say which retail store has that, because I think the lines are going to be plenty long enough anyway. Typically, I'm a Black Friday mall shopper because I actually like the fact that everybody's in a good mood. Everybody's off work. There's a lot of people around. Yeah, it's a pain to find a parking spot, but once you get inside, everybody's feeling good, spending money. They're in the holiday mood. You got that
They're
giant
crazy.
Christmas tree. I actually like the
crazy.
I understand I'm in the minority of this one. I like the mall on Black Friday. Every other place, though, I'm not willing to throw elbows to get a $45 tablet at blank retail store.
What about a $140 40-inch TV?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Everyone put
you on
the price.
Put you on your back. What's next?
Pat Mahomes is clearly the MVP favorite. I don't know about clearly, but how far out ahead is he?
Yeah, Vegas agrees with you that it's not clear-cut.
Yeah,
I say you and Vegas are both nuts. Vegas tells me that Patrick Mahomes is indeed the favorite at 3-1, followed by Drew Brees. Drew Brees! At 5-1, Aaron Rodgers still in the hunt at 6-1, Tom Brady at 8-1, and then Jared Goff and Todd Gurley at about 12-1 apiece. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 guys that in theory could still win the MVP. I'm going to tell you right now, Todd Gurley's not going to win the MVP. The quarterback position is just too important in this league, and there's too many great ones playing right now to give it to a running back. Not to mention he's having a good year. But he's not having like an all-time great running back year. And there have been guys that have had much better years at that position that didn't come close to winning the MVP. So don't get me wrong. Gurley's been awesome. But he's not going to win league MVP. It's going to be a quarterback. So it's going to be either Pat, Breeze, Aaron Rodgers, or Jared Goff. In the case of Aaron Rodgers, compared to what he's been before, he's been pretty pedestrian. You can cross him off the list. I really think it's a three-horse race. I'd say the same thing about Tom Brady. Like, if you compare Tom Brady to everybody else, he's still great. But if you compare Tom Brady just to what he did last year as the actual MVP, he hasn't played quite as good. I think it's a three-horse race. Pat, Drew Brees, and Jared Goff. And basically, you could argue those are the three best teams in the entire NFL. I think whoever has the best final month of the season between those three guys probably takes home the hardware. But, man, I'm going to be shocked if it's not Patrick Mahomes. That guy's been as close to perfect at that position as you could possibly be. If you don't win MVP with the season that he's having, then I don't know what the hell's going to do.
Yeah, but it's not like Drew Brees is that far behind, and I would put Drew Brees ahead of him right now only because of how this last game went. Look, at the end of the day, the MVP, Patrick Mahomes had two chances to win that game at the end of the game, and he didn't pull it off. An MVP would have pulled that off.
I like how the one thing you're holding against him is a game where he threw for, what, 468 yards or something like
true,
that?
True, but he also had three interceptions. I mean, there's certain he put them. He kept them in the game, and the reason why it was so close, but he's also somewhat of the reason why they lost. That was a complete team loss. I will say that, though.
I think that Patrick Mahomes is the favorite, and I think he's going to end up winning it, although I could see the argument from the NFL going either way because Drew Brees on the way out, kind of like a lifetime achievement award type thing, and Patrick Mahomes, the new guy in town. So
how it works.
Same thing with Jared Goff.
That's how those work, man.
Hell, same thing with Tom Brady now that I think about it. So I don't know who's going to end up with that award. What's next?
Kansas University has a no live mascot policy, which means in their football game versus Texas tomorrow, Bevo, who is their mascot, won't be allowed on the field. How do you feel about live mascots?
Love live mascots. Ralphie the Buffalo. Is there anything better than going to a game and seeing a buffalo run around the before the game? You might get a chance to see somebody get trampled by a 1,000-pound animal. That's incredible. The best live mascot miscue I ever saw. Air Force has a falcon. They were in a bowl game. Everybody knows where this story's going, right?
Yep.
The falcon's supposed to fly around the stadium a lap or two and then come back to land on his owner's hand, which, by the way, falconry, what a crazy thing. Like, what?
That's awesome.
What?
I want to call myself a falconer.
Like, what? Is that a real thing?
Hell of a profession.
So the Air Force Falcon flies around the stadium one time, and everybody oohs and ahs and cheers for it. And then the second time it was supposed to fly around the stadium and then come back to its owner, and it flew around the stadium the second time. And then it went Falcon, and it flew over the top of the stadium, never to come back. One of the greatest highlights I've ever seen. And the guy's standing there like, have you seen my Falcon?
You had one job.
Mike the Tiger at LSU, he's pretty cool. And then you've got your, like, confused mascots like Willie the Wildcat, where it's half human, half mascot. Come on, bro. If you're going to have a mascot head, you can't have human appendages. What's next?
I'm sure you saw Alex Smith shatter his leg on Sunday. Yeah, that was pretty. How high up is that on the list of worst injuries you've seen?
I have to admit, I tore my ACL back in 2003, and ever since then, I haven't been able to look at bad leg injuries. So anytime, unless I'm watching the game live, and when that happens, I get so squeamish. There was a game 4 or 5 years ago, the Chiefs versus the Broncos. I wonder if anybody remembers this. Hit me up on the text line at 69306. A Broncos lineman had his foot turned around backwards, and I was watching the game live, so I couldn't turn away. But I was looking at my TV screen. I'm like, wait a minute. Am I seeing that right? Dude had his foot on backwards. Most of the time, when it's just a highlight, because I wasn't watching this game live, I just heard about it. I don't want to see it. The Willis McGahee injury, ugh, where his knee.
Yeah, that's brutal.
I mean, your knee's not supposed to. Sean Livingston, remember that one?
Ooh, that was another. Oof.
The worst of all time, though, and I laugh because I don't want to cry, has to be Kevin Ware. The guy's leg turned into cigarette ashes in the middle of a basketball court. I remember I was driving. So I used to host a radio show in Lawrence. So basically, my entire job was to cover KU basketball. And so I was down in Dallas for the KU game. It was the game where Trey Burke hit the shot. Michigan knocked out KU. So we're driving back, me and my buddy, and we're listening to the game on the radio. We turned it on in the middle of that play. So we didn't actually hear the play. All we heard was the after broadcast, and all we heard was, oh my goodness, this is one of the worst and scariest things we've ever seen. People all over the stands and in the and on the bench are crying and vomiting. That's what the guy said on the radio. And we're like, what could have possibly happened? And then when we saw the highlight afterwards, we both cried and vomited.
You understood.
Last one.
Tiger plays Phil tomorrow with an on pay-per-view with the let me Let's reset that one.
Easy for you to say.
Tiger plays Phil tomorrow with on, I don't really know, pay-per-view with the winner taking home $9 million. How interested are you?
You think I'm going to pay $19.99 to see two guys?
A lot of people are.
Are they?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
One Brad Fanning said he definitely is. It's a can't miss.
Well, one Brad Fanning, in my opinion, could spend $20 on a billion other things in a better way. He could literally take a $20 bill, go to the gas station, ask him to convert it into all ones, and then roll each one up like a little cigarette and just light it. Just burn. That would be a better usage to me of $20 than spending it on seeing Tiger Woods take on Phil Mickelson. First of all, what are we talking about? Like the ninth and the 23rd ranked golfer in the world right now? Guys, Manny Pacquiao.
Really?
Manny Pacquiao versus Floyd Mayweather thinks that they're a little bit late for this one. Like, come on, guys. Maybe 10 or 15 years ago this would have been. And then they think that they're going to sweeten the pot. For me as a sports fan, yesterday I see the headline, Tiger and Phil have a $200,000
side. So fake.
I don't care if you guys have a $200,000 side bet. Save it. You two old guys, go out there and golf. You're not getting my $19.99 because I don't have that much money. That's Julio Sanchez. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. Coming up next, let's talk Chiefs with national NFL writer Matt Verderam right here on 610 Sports Radio. So I was a little bit distracted. The Ronald McDonald float's coming down the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade right now.
That'll do it.
Please get a moment of silence for the Ronald McDonald float. Thank you. Welcome back into 610 Sports Radio. Julio Sanchez, sports machine Sean Levine, taking you up until 3 o'clock. I'm taking a peek right now at the Chiefs' season statistics. Just doesn't even seem right. I know you know they've been good. But through 11 games, Patrick Mahomes, 37 touchdown passes. Kareem Hunt on pace to do what he did a year ago. Tyreek Hill, if there was any question if he was an elite wide receiver, how does 11 touchdowns and 1,100 yards sound 11 games into the season? Not too shabby. Let's talk some Chiefs with my dear friend, kind enough to join us on a Thanksgiving morning, national NFL writer, Matt Verderam. How are we living, Matt?
I'm great, Sean. How are you?
I'm doing good, buddy. In a weird, twisted way, do you actually feel better about this team, even though they lost on Monday night to the Rams?
I feel at least as good about them. That loss didn't change my opinion on either one of those teams. I think, look, the Rams are really good. But the Chiefs are really good. I don't think there's any other team, save New Orleans, that could have played the Rams like that. I mean, the Chiefs turned the ball over five times and scored 51 points. So, you know, you do the simple math on that and 13 penalties. Okay, right. If they cut the penalties in half and only turn the ball over twice, they win the game, probably easily. So I don't have anything but excitement going forward toward what the Chiefs can do this year.
The reason I kind of formed the question the way that I did, Matt, was because the only two times the Chiefs have lost this season have been to elite teams on the road in primetime by 3 points. Is that the only way to beat this team, to get into a shootout, to have home field advantage? Because most likely in the playoffs, those things aren't going to happen.
I don't think they lose at Arrowhead. Look, the Chiefs have made a long, long list of painful losses at Arrowhead Stadium in the playoffs, but they never had this quarterback, and they've never had this team. I do not think anybody's going to Arrowhead and beating them. And frankly, if they play even remotely near what they can play like, I don't think anybody's beating them. I mean, the Rams played a pretty good game. Now, the Rams did turn the ball over twice, one defensive touchdown, but not a lot of penalties. When New England played, New England had no penalties. Chiefs turned the ball over twice. If the Chiefs play a good game, I don't think there's anybody in the league that can beat this team just because they're so explosive offensively. And defensively, they're not good, but they can get after the quarterback. And that plays in January.
I'm a bit surprised to hear you say that. You don't think that New England or Pittsburgh or the Chargers or even the Texans, none of those offenses by the numbers are as good as the Chiefs, but could come in, let's say, to Arrowhead. The weather gets crappy. The Chiefs maybe lose a little bit of confidence heading into the playoffs. I mean, you don't think that those teams can go pound for pound and score with the Chiefs in the postseason?
I might surprise you by saying this. I think they will smoke New England if they play them again.
Really?
I don't think New England – really, yeah, because Gronkowski, if you watch the tape of them, he's a shell of himself right now. And he didn't play great against the Chiefs. He ended up with two big catches late in the game, but he did nothing. He had one catch like 6 yards all the rest of the game. New England cannot stop the Chiefs. And if that game's at Arrowhead, they're going to get to jump on the line of scrimmage because of the crowd noise. And you factor in Berry's back, although Justin Houston didn't play in that game. I think the Chiefs will lay it on New England. The only team that I would give a shot to go in there and beat them, unless, of course, the Chiefs play awful football, is Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh's the one team. They have a very vertical down-the-field attack. They can get pressure on the quarterback. Pittsburgh's the one team I could see going in there, and if they played their A game, having a shot. I don't think Houston has any chance. The Chargers, they never beat good teams, and they haven't beaten the Chiefs since the Reagan administration. So Pittsburgh would scare me the most. I don't think anybody else even has a shot of going in there and winning that game.
Feels like the Coolidge administration last time the Chargers beat the Chiefs. It's been a long, long time. Andy Reid came out and said that Eric Berry is going to start practicing after the bye week, which I would assume can't be a bad thing, but how much of a good thing is it really? How much better does Eric Berry in his current form make this defense?
Oh, I think if he comes back and he's Eric Berry, it changes the game. Because their pass rush, look, their defense isn't good, but they're good at a few things. They're really good on third down and medium and long. And they're great at getting to the quarterback. And they can be even more aggressive with Berry back there. And so, look, does he make them an elite defense? No. Nothing's going to make them an elite defense this year. But they have to just affect the passer, get off the field, shut things down in the red zone. The one thing Berry's going to do, too, if they play a team like New England, he can shut Gronkowski down. If they play Pittsburgh, he can take Connor out of the game. And those are the things right now they can't do. They just don't have that capability without him on the field. With him, they can pick one player out, a tight end or a back, and say, that guy's out of the game. It's completely erased. And, again, you know, when you have an offense the way the Chiefs do, if you're playing against him, you have to score almost every possession. If he makes a play here, a play there that ends a drive or two, that's probably the difference in the game.
Who do you think has been the defensive MVP for this team to this point? I think there's a couple of arguments to be made. One, Chris Jones. That guy has been unbelievable, especially getting to the quarterback. And then Dee Ford in a season where I literally thought it was going to go one of two ways. He was going to do what he's done his entire career, and that was probably it. Or he was going to be not as good as he has been. Don't get me wrong. I did not expect this. But he was going to be really good and force the Chiefs to pay him. There's no way they can't at this point, right?
I think what they will do this offseason, first of all, to answer your question, I think Jones has been the MVP of the defense. Although Ford, like you said, is right there. You could argue either way. I just think Jones, if everybody's looked at him for years and said, man, if he gets to that next level that we all think he has, guy's going to be dominant. Well, he's been dominant. Other than Aaron Donald, he's the best defensive tackle in football. Okay, 9 sacks for an interior lineman is ridiculous. Now, with Ford, I've been down on Ford. I thought, you know, up to this year, I just thought he would never learn to do anything other than a speed move. Well, that's changed. He's finally got some other moves. He's shown that. I think they're going to tag him, and they're going to make him prove it again. To me, this offseason is going to be tagging him, and they are going to shell out an ungodly amount of money for Chris Jones and Tyreek Hill. Those are going to be two extensions you're going to see this offseason, and they'll keep Ford around. This team next year really should look very, very similar. I don't think anybody who matters is gone except for Morse and maybe Nelson, depending on how much money he wants.
What about Marcus Peters after actually seeing him play across the field from the Chiefs? Did it look like that might have been the right move to trade him away in the offseason? Because leading up to the beginning of this year and really up until about a month ago, I thought, and I said behind this microphone, that trading Marcus Peters in the offseason might be the thing that ends up keeping the Chiefs from winning a Super Bowl. And then I looked at his grades, and I watched some highlights, mainly lowlights, and then I saw him against the Chiefs, and I thought, you know what? I mean, maybe, Matt, and you can tell me if you disagree, that was the right move to make to trade away Marcus Peters.
Well, nobody killed that trade more than me. I mean, I have buried the Chiefs over and over and over for that trade. And look, I'm of two minds. He has not played well this year. Now, how much of that factors into whether he got hurt in the game against San Diego or Los Angeles, as it may be, I don't know. But if he's on the field, then he's got to own his performance. That being said, they've played him in a much different way that the Chiefs played him. They move him all over the field. He plays a lot of press man. In Kansas City, he obviously was always on one side of the field, and he always played off. And so the play was always ahead of him. It was always in front of him. And he was so great because a lot of times he would take calculated risks and he would turn the ball over. I think if he was in Kansas City still, he would be the Marcus Peters who saw the first couple years of his career. So, I mean, I still, in some respects, think that they should have held on for him. That being said, I understand the side of it where you said, look, this is untenable. There's a report, I forget who wrote it up, that he wanted $19 million a year. He was never getting paid that. So I get it. And the Chiefs are going to have to pay other guys. I don't like the trade. I still think they'd be better this year with him. But he's not there, and they're 9-2. So it's hard to really crush the organization over that.
A couple minutes left with national NFL writer Matt Verderam. Matt and a machine on a Thanksgiving morning right here on 610 Sports Radio. If you think about that Chris Jones, though, like not a first-round pick, John Dorsey. Think about Marcus Peters. Think about all these different things that he was able to do. Essentially, right now, this is still John Dorsey's team, and I'm waiting, really, for Brett Veach to put his stamp on him, but that's another argument for another day. The schedule out the gates was incredibly difficult, and then we start working our way down, and like, man, Cincinnati's actually not a bad football team, and then you look, and you're like, oh, we got the Rams coming up in a couple of weeks. I feel like there hasn't been a break this entire season. But once the postseason comes around, isn't that going to be a huge feather in the cap of the Chiefs? Not only can they beat teams like the Chargers and the Steelers, and you throw all these teams in there, but they've actually done it?
Oh, I don't think any question. Look, they know they can beat Pittsburgh. They beat them earlier. They know they can beat the Chargers. They've beaten them 88 straight times. New England, look, they lost the game. I think to a man in that locker room, they all feel like if we see them again, especially at Arrowhead, like, we're going to win that game. I think the biggest problem for Kansas City in January is going to be themselves in terms of there is going to be so much anxiety and fear in that stadium of what if they do it again to us? What if they let everybody down again? But I gotta look, in the past, there's been one common denominator, typically, not every game, but most of the games. They have been woefully outplayed at the quarterback position. That is not going to happen this year. They may lose. They may give it up in some other ridiculous fashion. But this team, look, if you go into Arrowhead in the playoffs, you better be prepared to score 45 points. Because if you can't, you're going to go home. And that's why, to me, some of these teams just have no chance. I think Houston's decent. Houston's not scoring 45 points. Houston's not getting even 38, something like that. And I don't think the Chargers would either. I respect the Chargers, but they're not as good as Kansas City. And that's why, frankly, all the way from playing through this whole schedule, from playing and learning to get chemistry here with each other, as they're kind of a new team in a lot of ways. Like, they've gotten better and better and better as the year's gotten on. And now they should be getting Barry back. I have a source tells me Duvernay Tardif should be back within the month. Okay, now injuries are tricky, but that's what they think right now. So if that happens, Watkins gets his foot right, I mean, they should be as good as they're going to be as they go into January.
Not to mention, I'll get you out of here with this one. I'm taking a peek at the schedule right now. Five game, man, this season has flown by. Five games left. Yeah. Two of those games versus the Raiders. One of those games versus Baltimore, they're a 500 team. One of those games versus Seattle, they're a 500 team. And then that game versus the Chargers. How much, essentially, does that game versus the Chargers a month from now dictate what this team's going to do in the postseason?
Well, it's interesting. The Chargers losing to the Broncos made that a lot easier because the Chiefs are going to win the tiebreaker against the Chargers, even if they lose that game, as long as they beat the Raiders twice.
Which they should,
yeah. Because they're off a better divisional record. Right. So all they have to do as far as the division is concerned is just tie the Chargers. The Chargers still have to play at Pittsburgh in a few weeks. They got the Ravens. They got the Bengals. They got to go at Denver. Like, the Chargers not going to the division. The Chiefs need to win out because if they win out, they are mathematically the one seed. Nobody can catch them. I think they'll probably get the one seed with 13 wins, although there's some semantics we don't have time for. They could lose tiebreaker to Houston at 13-3 if the Texans can run the table. But they're going to be favored in every game they play the rest of the year. And the Raiders game, if they lose to that team, they should be contracted. The Raiders are abominable. So you really come down to assuming they beat them. Look, Baltimore at home, they should win. They'll be probably close to a 10-point favorite. They should beat the Chargers. It's a Thursday night at home. That's a tough spot for the Chargers. They got to come halfway across the country on a short week, playing very cold weather. That's, and then the Chiefs get a break, because if they can win that game, then, yeah, they play Seattle on a Sunday night, but they get a week and a half off before that game. So the Chiefs have got to play this as though, hey, look, we have got to just win out, which they should, and then you're home for the whole run in the playoffs. Look, this is the best position they've ever been in my lifetime to go to the Super Bowl. I'm 30, been watching for 25 years. This is the best shot Kansas City's had to play in a Super Bowl since the days of Flynn.
I'm a little bit older than you by about 3.5-4 years, but I completely agree. I've convinced myself a couple of times, a couple of 13-3 teams, number one overall seeds, maybe this team. I actually believe that this team is the best in the AFC, can get to and win a Super Bowl.
You know what? I mean, and I'll leave it for you at this. I know you got to go, but this is, look, 13-3 in the past attempt has meant Steve Bono, it's meant Elvis Gerber.
Right.
The 1 year they did have Trent Green, but they were going against Manning's Colts and Brady's Pats, and they were never the best team that year. I think this is the first time, really, since Dawson played with them in maybe 71, where you look at them, and if you're an opponent, you say, I do not want to play them. I do not want to play them. I do not want to go to Arrowhead. I do not want to have to play Mahomes in that offense. The Chiefs instill fear in teams, and that's something they haven't done for a long time. I mean, this is a team that you look at and say, I don't want any part of them in a playoff game. And I think the Chiefs know it. They play that way. They play with a lot of swag. Could they lose? Sure. It's all game sevens in the NFL. But it will be a monumental task if they get home field advantage and go in there and beat them.
Great stuff as always this morning, Matt. Thanks so much. Happy Thanksgiving, brother.
Happy Thanksgiving, man. Take
care. I cut him off there at the very end. What a rude thing to do on Thanksgiving. You know what I'm saying? Especially to his point about the Patriots. I doubt that Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time, Bill Belichick, greatest coach of all time. What have they been to, like 8 Super Bowls? I don't think that they're in fear of any other team. But if they had to start listing teams, I bet the Chiefs are at the very top of teams that they don't want to play. What happened 5 years ago at Arrowhead Stadium? They got pantsed. What happened earlier this year? The Chiefs could have and should have won that game. What happened last year, first game of the season? The Chiefs boat raced them. What happened in the playoffs 3 seasons ago? New England won the game. They were at home, but the Chiefs were right there. The crossover is happening right in front of our faces. It's a crazy time to be a Chiefs fan. I agree with what he said. They're 9-2. They've got a win versus, I would say, 1, 2, 3, maybe 4 playoff teams already. This is a tested team, and the last 5 games on the schedule features one opponent with a winning record. You play the Oakland Raiders in 40% of your games the rest of the way. Life is good. Julio Sanchez, sports machine Sean Levine, coming up next. Julio, this is a rhetorical question, so I don't want an actual answer. If your car is getting a little bit too old and it's not running as smooth as it used to, what should you do? You go out and you get a car with less miles. That's what KU did earlier this week. Let's talk about it next, right here on 610 Sports Radio.